This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, thanks, and welcome everyone to this plenary call of the CCT review team. I'm Jordan Buchanan, subbing in for Jonathan, who is unfortunately absent today, as is Laureen. So today we're going to spend most of our time again talking about DNS abuse. As folks hopefully saw, Drew sent around a revised version of the DNS abuse paper, but we're going to also have a presentation from the authors of the DNS abuse report, assuming that Martin's able to join, but I see Maciej is here at least, so hopefully we'll be able to get some time with the authors. And then our only other agenda item is to take a look at Jonathan's latest revision of the parking paper. So before we get to that, let me just ask if anyone has any revisions to their statement of interest. All right, it looks like no. Oh, Calvin's typing, maybe he does. No, okay. all right, no updates to statements of interest. I will go ahead and jump then to agenda item 4, which is a review of the updated version of the parking paper. I'll note that there's still some numbers that we're taking a look at, or specifically I'm supposed to be taking a look at, that may tweak some of the exact figures in this chapter. I actually think even if we don't get those revised, it's not necessary for this iteration, which is really mostly supposed to be based on the new NTLD stats data, which is now incorporated into this chapter. Someone typing loudly. In any case, Jonathan sent around a few other edits. This is being presented right now, but seems, is this scrollable? I can't scroll. Can anyone scroll? Aha. Hopefully this means we can all scroll. So I just wanted to open this up and see if anyone has further comments on the parking paper or questions. Wodo's hand is up. Go ahead, Wodo.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Jordan, about the title, I think I agree that the title should remain Tough Hacking, not this changed title. Is that correct?
Good question. I do think we agreed that.
Sorry, Jordan.
Yeah.
One other thing about that particular issue that we didn't discuss last time is that I kind of went through the main report again, and there are many places where it's talking about parking. So if we decide to change the title here, it's going to affect a lot of areas within the main report, as well as in this particular paper. In this paper, last time I counted that the word parking was appearing 55 times, so we change from the word parking is going to cause a lot of editing work.
Yeah, thanks, Wodo. I do remember that...
Hello, this is Martin. Sorry for the delay.
Hey, Martin, thanks for joining. We're just wrapping up a conversation on another topic that we started, so we'll be back to you in just a minute.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Wodo, so yes, I do remember we discussed this on the last call, and I think you're right that we had agreed to just continue to use parking. That was the sense of the folks on the call. So let's relay that feedback back to Jonathan, who's been holding the pen on this, but unfortunately isn't on the call today. Any other feedback on the latest revisions to the parking paper? And we're getting to the point in this process that we're going to be finalizing these sections, so or at least finalizing for the interim for the supplemental report, draft report that we'll be sending out in just a few weeks. So if you have any input, I think this is basically the last chance to provide it. So otherwise, other than Waldo's comment, we'll consider this section pretty baked. All right, great. So why don't we go ahead then, and we'll call that a wrap on the parking discussion and jump back to the agenda item number 2, which is the presentation on the DNS abuse study from Martin and Maciej. So we can switch to the other deck and turn the mic over to them.
So actually, Jordan, I'll just give a quick introduction.
Sure.
Yeah, and you've actually already seen this. Could I get a scrolling or presenter right, Brenda? There we go. Yeah, I'll just walk you through the first few slides. You can see this is actually the slides we're going to be using for the webinar as well. So kind of a preview of what we're going to look at. And just to give you a little background, as you've already seen, this is basically coming out of a 2009 paper where we asked these security community these four questions that you see on the screen, and then we get these safeguard recommendations that you're all quite familiar with by that this time, and we've seen in Drew and Calvin's chapter. You know that we have this 2016 paper that sort of crafted this research model that we're now seeing the sort of deliverable on, I suppose, and then enter the review team, and you have a mandate to look at all these issues. So this is all the timeline. This is what we're going to go over on the webinars tomorrow, just to give you kind of a preview of that. So won't spend too much time on that. We'll kind of turn it over to the stars of the show, Martin and Maciej. Maciej, I see you're still on mute. That's a sort of common problem on Adobe Connect, so you may want to take yourself off mute before we jump right in. And I think I'm not sure who's going first, but Martin, Maciej, I will turn it over to you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Brian. This is Martin. I'll do the first section, discuss a little bit about the data we used. Then Maciej will take over and discuss the domain reputation. I'll finish off with registrar, geographic location, and privacy or proxy services. So can I switch to the next? Oh, yeah, okay. So basically, the goal of the study is, I guess, already known to everybody here. It's come up with a comparison between the DNS abuse in new and legacy GTLDs. And we have been looking at spam, phishing, and malware for that. And also wanted to have a statistical analysis of potential abuse drivers, maybe things like DNSSEC. And, of course, the motivation for all this is the ICANN new generic top-level domain program. So for this study, we used what we think is six of the best blacklists out there. For phishing, mainly anti-phishing working group, which is a very well-known blacklist, contains phishing URLs, and stop badware contains malware URLs, SURBL, which actually contains four separate blacklists, contains three types of content, as phishing, spam, and malware domains. And the last three are Spamhaus, which is a huge repository of spam domains. Cleanemax, which again has three different types of feeds, which contains phishing, malware, and something they call defaced URLs, basically hacked websites. And we also added the Secure Domain Foundation, which, among other things, has phishing and malware URLs. So those are the blacklist data we used in order to be able to map domains that are getting reported through these blacklists. We need to have WIS data as well to be able to map the abuse to registrars or geographical location. So for that, we used the WIS XML API, which contains data for all the new GTLDs and a subset of the legacy GTLDs for the period of early 2014 to until the end of 2016. One problem we faced using this data set was that due to the method of data collection, some gaps, I don't know, I shouldn't say gaps, some for some domains, no data could be found in this data source. So we needed to have an additional data source for these missing domains, and the main tools was willing to provide us with the missing data, which allowed us to cover all the abusive domains with data. We also used domain data in the form of zone files for 3 years, one zone file per day for each TLD provided by ICANN. And for the inferential analysis, we also scanned our own data. I should say we scanned domains and created our own data. So we did active web and DNS scans. We scanned each of the new GTLDs at, I believe, February or March this year, or May, I guess, May this year. And those were at the time some, I believe, some 24 million new GTLDs. And we created a sample of the legacy GTLDs to scan because there are too many legacy GTLDs to be able to scan them all in this short time span. And we came up with a representative sample of some 17 million domain names to scan. And finally, we also used registry information from ICANN containing information such as sunrise periods and information about registry operators and parent companies of registrar operators. Okay, so now Maciek will take over.
Hello? Hello? Just a question as we go along.
Yes?
Hello? Is that okay?
Yes, you have.
Yeah, just the previous slide.
Previous slide.
Yes,
yes,
on the previous slide. Yeah, you said that the legacy GTLDs, you took a sample because there are too many. How many legacy GTLDs are there? I thought there are just like a couple of a dozen or something. The legacy GTLDs, there are not many. The new GTLDs are the ones that...
Yes, but
so I should,
yeah,
I,
Martin.
Oh,
no, please go for it, Martin.
Okay, so
no, please,
I should have said we took a sample of domains registered for legacy GTLDs. So there are, of course, not that many legacy GTLDs.
Okay,
all
right.
Understood. Registered. Yes. Sorry for the confusion.
Oh, understood. Yeah.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, Maciek will take over here.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Yes, so to determine the distribution of malicious content, of malicious domains across GTLDs and also registrars and privacy and proxy providers, we built on our previously proposed three security occurrence reputation metrics. So first, we analyzed the number of unique domains. Although it is the most commonly used and most intuitive reputation metric, it also has its own limitations. Why? Because it might not give an indication of the amount of abuse that is associated with a single domain name. Let's just imagine one maliciously registered domain name that is used by the attacker extensively in different phishing campaigns against different banks. So for this reason, we propose a second complementary reputation metrics, and we analyze the number of actually fully qualified domain names. But also this metric might have some it actually has some limitations because it might not indicate the amount of rebuilds associated with single fully qualified domain names. Let's just imagine a domain that is compromised through, let's say, vulnerable plugging of a content management system, and then the attacker uses it extensively to distribute malware, binary configuration files, and so on, through URLs. So actually this work, as you might still remember from Johannes' work, we were saying that it stems from our collaboration with the Dutch National Police, where we analyzed URLs that were used to distribute child abuse material. And then we realized that one fully qualified domain name can be used to distribute just one, for example, malicious photo, whereas others are used to distribute tens or even hundreds of malicious photos using distinctive paths or URLs. And we also cross-checked and manually analyzed other types of data sets, such as phishing and malware, and actually in those types of abuse we also observed this trend. So here, just to give you an example, here we present those three proposed reputation metrics, and phishing domains, fully qualified domain names, and URLs or paths based on anti-phishing working group and per legacy GTLDs. So what we did here, we aggregated abuse incidents on a quarterly basis, as you can see here. And here on y-axis, we actually present the number of incidents in a logarithmic scale. So what we can see here is actually the very significant difference between those three reputation metrics. So here on the bottom, we see the number of domains. In the middle here, number of fully qualified domain names. And the top line corresponds to the number of URLs or paths. So actually what we observed that, for example, at some point in time, we discovered around, from what I remember, more than 50,000 of fully qualified domain names under one domain name, amazonauth.com. Here, for example, in terms of paths, we observed something like 700,000 of URLs related to just one fully qualified domain name, to t.co, which is a well-known, of course, URL shortener from Twitter. And those three reputation metrics are very useful and very complementary. And what's also very interesting here is that they reflect the attacker's profit-maximizing behavior. The attackers do abuse free legitimate services such as online storage web services and URL shorteners that I mentioned, and they affect the reputation of such associate services. So here we present, from now on we will concentrate only on the number of domains as reputation metric. So here we present phishing domains from anti-phishing working group, aggregated per new GTLDs and legacy GTLDs. Again, we aggregate abuse counts on quarterly basis, and on y-axis we again present the total number of blacklisted domains in a logarithmic scale. So what we can see here is actually that the number of incidents in legacy GTLDs is very stable, and at the same time we see the clear upward trend in a number of abuse domains in the new GTLDs. Also, please note that we marked the total number of abuse domains, and it's mainly driven by legacy GTLDs and .com and abuse.com domains. When we take a look at another phishing feat, this time from CleanMX phishing, then we see exactly the same trend, upward trend for new GTLDs and very stable number of abuse domains in legacy GTLDs. Here is another graph from SURBL phishing. And when we now analyze the number of malware domains, here we see SURBL malware. And here we see malware domains with CleanMX malware. We see exactly the same trend. So while the number of abused domains remains approximately constant in legacy GTLDs, we observe a clear upward trend in the absolute number of phishing and malware domains in new GTLDs. So now, let's take a look at actually spam. So here, the results are very, very interesting, actually quite alarming. What we see here is that at the end of 2016, we see that actually the number of domains in new GTLDs, there are more abused domains in new GTLDs than in legacy GTLDs. When we take a look at another spam feed, SURBLWS, we observe exactly the same trend. What is also very interesting is that the total number of abused domains remains very stable. And what we actually observe there is that the attackers switch from legacy to new GTLDs.
I saw a question from David Taylor in the other room, but maybe he took his hand off. So, David, can you confirm?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, sorry, it was a question, but I was going to wait for a little bit further. I just couldn't remember whether there was a slide later on or we'd got that where I was looking at the phishing, where we're looking at the total abuse in new GTLDs against legacy GTLDs, where we'd normalized it against numbers of registrations. Mm-hmm. And there may be a slide elsewhere coming through.
Yes. We will discuss it in a moment.
I thought so, yeah. So I was jumping ahead. I said I've got an answer to my own question, so it doesn't matter. Thanks.
Sure. Okay, so, but of course, what is very important here is if we want to really compare the concentration of abuse domains in legacy and new GTLDs, we need to take indeed size into account. So how we calculated size? We verified the number of domains in each zone in the new GTLDs and in legacy GTLDs that we used in this study. And as you can see, also starting from 2016, we see a considerable growth in the number of new GTLD domains in new GTLDs, while the number in legacy GTLDs remains quite stable. Now, how we calculated rates? We calculated the number of blacklisted domains divided by all domains found in zone files in each study at the end of each study period on quarterly basis and multiplied by 1,000 registrations. So now we're moving to actually abuse rates, and here we present the time series of abuse rate of phishing domains in legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs, and here based on the anti-phishing working group feed. This time on y-axis we have rates in a linear scale. So what is very interesting here is that both lines related to new GTLDs and to legacy GTLDs are converging with time and are almost and we also have almost the same rates at the end of 2016. When we take a look closer, we see that as many as 82.5% of all abuse domains in new GTLDs are in .com. This is nothing surprising because of course there are many, many more registrations, .com registrations than any other. And what's interesting, the top five most abused legacy GTLDs are .com, .net, .org, .info, and .biz. And that is actually, that corresponds, that is exactly the market share of legacy GTLDs. And that actually gives the intuition about the how they're abused, and they're actually, the great majority of domains are compromised domains, but I will discuss it a bit later. Now when we take a look at new GTLDs, we see, at least for anti-phishing working group, that the top five most abused new GTLDs collectively own 55.7 percent of all blacklisted domains in all new gTLDs. But those do not reflect the market share, and the top five most abused new gTLDs, they're changing depending on the analyzed data set. So when we take a look at the abuse rate of malware domains in legacy and gTLDs based on stop bug refit, we see until 2016 an exponential growth in terms of abuse rates. And we see that almost entire 2016 we observe more higher rates of abuse domains in new gTLDs than in legacy gTLDs. And what is very interesting, and of course something to be expected, are the results for spam domains in legacy and new gTLDs. And this is a figure for based on the anti-phishing, sorry, the spam house feed. And here the differences are really, really huge. For example, at the end of 2016, we observe a rate for legacy gTLDs, it was around 50, and for new gTLDs, it was around 500, which is one order magnitude higher. So now let's take a look at the top.
A question.
Please.
Hello.
Yes.
There was a question about two slides behind.
This one or?
Yeah, I think it's this one. And this no, the next one. Yeah, this one. 10 series abuse rates of malware domains in legacy and gTLDs.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted you just maybe to explain what's happening when the new gTLDs go below the legacy gTLDs in terms of malware domain count.
Yeah, I have hard time understanding the question. Yeah, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question at all, actually.
Hello.
Wado, we can't hear you properly.
I think just continue. I'll just continue with the presentation. I have poor connection. Sorry about that. Just continue.
Okay. Thanks. Yes. So here we present top 10 new gTLDs with the highest relative concentration of a blacklist domains according to SURBL. SURBL WS dataset and Spamhaus. Those results are for fourth quarter of 2016. And what we can see here, for example, if we take a look at .science, that is the most abused gTLD in terms of relative concentrations, we see that the rate is around 5,000. What does it mean? It means that actually more than 50% domains were abused, and this is quite impressive number. If we take a look at the second one, .stream, it's 4,700, and that corresponds. That means that 47% of all domains that we found in zone files were actually blacklisted by Spamhaus. And when you take a look at the results for SURBL WS, then those trends are actually actually very similar. The most abused new gTLD in the fourth quarter of 2016 is .racing, and the rate is 3,800, and that corresponds of course to 38% of all domains in that we found in zone files were blacklisted by SURBL WS by blacklist. So now the question is, does the problem affect all new gTLDs? And the short answer is no. Spamhaus, for example, and SURBL blacklist, that were really, really a huge blacklist, reveal that as many as 1/3 of all new GTLDs that we studied, that were available for registration, did not experience a single incident in the fourth quarter of 2016. On the other hand, Spamhaus, when we analyzed the Spamhaus data, we revealed that in case of 15 new GTLDs in the fourth quarter of 2016, Spamhaus blacklisted at least 10% of all registered domains in each of them. So that's also quite alarming. Those are quite alarming statistics. So far we were analyzing blacklists, but what is actually very important is to distinguish between compromised and maliciously registered domain names. And this is quite critical because they actually require different mitigation actions by different intermediaries. For compromised domains, it's more hosting providers and webmasters that should clean the content of hacked domain or hacked website. On the other hand, for maliciously registered domain names, it should be a more registrar that suspends the domain. So in our study, we used three heuristics. First one, if the given domain name contains a string of brand name or its misspelled version. And the third heuristic was if it was involved in malicious activity within 3 months after its creation. And those are taken, we built our method based on previous studies, for example, by anti-phishing working group, by Greg Aron and Rod Rasmussen, and their recent study, global study in phishing. We actually see that the attackers, what is also quite interesting, tend to age domain names so that they get a higher reputation score from security organizations. So now, let's take a look at the results. So here is the graph for anti-phishing working group. So what we did, first of all, we filter out all third-party domains. We label them legitimate, and those are legitimate domains of services that are misused by the attackers. We maintain a list of those services that are exploited by the attackers. Those are, as I was mentioning before, URL shorteners, free hosting services, web storage online services, and so on. We also experience not more than 1%, 1.2% of unlabeled domain names, and it was because of the missing data, whois data. And still, and the rest we label as maliciously registered or compromised. And here is another very, very interesting finding, is that with the time, the attackers tend to more and more maliciously register domain names. So far, until 2014, it was the great majority of domains were actually were compromised. And now we can see that with time, it actually changes. And we performed very similar analysis for a Stop Badware dataset, and the results are very similar. So let's now take a look at compromised domain names. So here on the top, we see the rates of all malware, all blacklisted malware domains based on Stop Badware dataset. And here on the bottom right, we see the rates of compromised malware domains only per new GTLDs. In the line is in purple, and for legacy GTLDs. And what we can see here is that the rates of abused domains in legacy GTLDs are driven by compromised domain names. So please note that lines corresponding to legacy GTLDs in bottom and top figures are very similar. Now, when we take a look at maliciously registered domain names, so now on the right bottom we see rates of maliciously registered malware domains. We see that the rates of abused domains in new GTLDs are driven by maliciously registered domains. And actually those rates are are relatively much higher in comparison to legacy GTLDs. And also, interesting finding is that at least in URL blacklists, we see that those can be driven by single campaigns. So what our manual analysis reveals is that there are campaigns that we find anecdotal evidence that those are single campaigns or multiple ones. We see a lot of domains with, for example, Apple or iPhone or misspelled versions of those registered by the same entity, registered with the same registrar, more or less within the same time or even within the same day. And sometimes those statistics can be driven by single campaigns. Now, yes, please.
Can you clarify, like, on that last slide, what do those two graphs represent?
Sure, absolutely. So here on the top, we see the rates of malware domains, and those are two lines correspond to the green one, to legacy GTLDs, and the purple one to new GTLDs. And here we distinguish on the right bottom, we distinguish only maliciously registered domain names. And why we are doing it? Just to show that the great majority of all blacklisted domains are actually maliciously registered ones. Does it
right, for the new GTLDs?
Yes, for the new GTLDs, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. So one of the main goals of this study was also to perform inferential analysis of abuse in the new GTLDs and to verify if actually there are if we can distinguish certain drivers, certain features that will drive the abuse counts. So I don't want to go too much into the details of statistics here because that's not the point, but just very briefly, we used negative binomial generalized linear models here. And what we did, we pre-selected and we collected and measured several independent variables. And the dependent variable here was the number of blacklisted domains. So first, new GTLD size. And what's the rationale behind? So in fact, our previous study on the entire DNS ecosystem and of all GTLDs revealed that there is a strong positive correlation between the number of domains in registry and the number of abused domains. So in other words, larger TLDs have a larger attack surface, but that strongly corresponds to compromised domain names. And if we analyze TLDs, then in legacy GTLDs and CCTLDs, abuse there is driven mainly by compromised domain names. So second potential driver was DNSSEC. So again, in our previous study, we used it as a proxy for security efforts. Why? Because some registries, they incentivize their registrar so that they sign their DNS with DNSSEC. And the idea or rationale behind was like, if they're doing it, then most probably they do much more, they perform many more measures to prevent abuse in their DNS ecosystems. On the other hand, an alternative explanation would be that Mistrans actually could be interested in deploying DNSSEC and signing their maliciously registered domain names. So the third driver that we analyzed was the number of parked domains. So here we wanted our initial idea was to correct for the new GTLD size. So how does it work? In fact, parked domains do not serve the same type of content as regular websites. They do not run software that could be easily exploited. So, on the other hand, we know that parked domains may be used to scam users or to distribute malware. So the next two features that we measured were no DNSSEC, no DNS, meaning that the domain did not resolve to any IP address, or HTTP error, meaning that the domain resolved to IP address, but the corresponding website did not serve any content. So the idea here is that domains serving content are exposed to certain types of vulnerabilities and can be hacked. And if those domains do not serve any content, they cannot simply be hacked. Another, the next feature that we pre-selected was the type. And here it was the proxy for strict registration policies. So what we did, we labeled each TLD according to four groups: generic groups, geographic, community, and brand GTLDs. And we assigned numbers to them: generic 1, geographic 2, community 3, and brand 4. So what's the intuition here? If we have, for example, .top GTLD, which is a generic GTLD, it's much easier. There are no registration restrictions there to for Mistrans to actually register such domain. If we take .pharmacy, which represents the community the new GTLD, then the registrar needs to prove that he or she represents the legitimate pharmacy. So those registration levels actually TLD actually corresponds to strict registration policies. And finally, what we did, we also included a registry operator, or to be more specific, parent company of registry operators as a dummy variable in the model, as a proxy for registration practices in general. So the rationale behind was that maybe this feature will capture joint registration practices like pricing, potentially registration in bulk, payment methods, and so on and so on. Okay, so before going actually to and before explaining the results of this inferential analysis, I would like to spend one more slide on our active measurements. So I mentioned which we found quite interesting also. So what we did, as you remember, Martin mentioned that we scanned. We used our active measurement platform to verify if the domains are parked, if they do not resolve, meaning they are labeled as no DNS, if there's an HTTP error of the corresponding website, or if they redirect to another website. And this is quite interesting because in legacy GTLDs, apart from the content, apart from the domains that serve content, we see that a quite significant part of domains redirect to other domains, and also we see quite significant number of parked domains. In new GTLDs, the two largest groups, apart from, of course, content, are the domains with no DNS record or those that serve an HTTP error. And this is especially interesting because previous study from 2015 shown that there are as many as 16% of all domains in the new GTLDs that do not resolve to any IP address. Our study shows that there are as many as 24.2% of all domains that do not resolve even. Okay. So now let's move to the results from our analysis. What we observe is first that there is a weak, very weak, but positive correlation between the number of domains in a TLD, meaning the new GTLD size, and the number of blacklisted domains. And this is something to be expected because the great majority of blacklisted domains are actually maliciously registered rather than compromised. When we take a look at DNSSEC, we see a very weak positive correlation. And again, this is something that we could expect, that the correlation will be very weak. Why? Because you remember last time we used DNSSEC as a proxy for security efforts. But the problem here is that all new GTLDs are required to deploy DNSSEC and in advance to show the plan how they're going to do it. So we cannot really treat it as a proxy for security efforts. Another interesting thing, we see very weak, again, positive correlation between the number of parked domains and the number of abused domains. As expected for no DNS and HTTP errors, so domains that do not serve content cannot be really hacked, and here we see very weak negative correlation. So the more domains that do not serve any content, the less abused domains. And one very interesting result, somehow also quite intuitive, we see negative, still not very strong, but the strongest in comparison to all other drivers. We see that there is a correlation between the registration restrictness and the number of abused domains. And finally, we did not really find any statistically significant results that would prove that there is a correlation between registry operators and the number of abuse counts. But the results, but what we would need to do here is actually to collect a lot more different potential driving factors, of course, such as pricing, but not only. We would need to collect, for example, payment methods and other potential driving factors, and collect them actually on more or less on a daily basis, and to find really correlation between those and abuse domains at the domain level. So I think now Martin will continue with privacy and proxy services.
Thank you, Maciek.
Okay, let's see. So we also took a look at the use of privacy and proxy services in relation to abuse. And first, a little bit about privacy or proxy services. Well, these services are, by definition, not, So these services can be used for legitimate reasons as well. So you can use them to protect your privacy, block spam, or stop any unwanted solicitations. So there are many legitimate reasons why somebody would want to have a privacy and proxy services linked to his or her domain. And of course, the bad guys, the criminals that abuse domains, like privacy or proxy services for the same reasons, of course. So in this study, we analyzed how many privacy and proxy services are actually used in domain registration, and how are they used. So in order to find these services, we extracted all the registrant information from the WIS data we have, and we did a keyword search for strings such as privacy, proxy, protect, etc. And combining this with some manual inspection, we found some 570 privacy or proxy services. There might be more, but these are so used so infrequently that they're not worth. They might have like less than 5 domains registered. Let's see. So the way privacy proxy service works, of course, is the registrant information is substituted by information from the privacy and proxy service. Usually, you would hope that if there's an email address or a telephone number available, and you send email or you call the number,
that you can reach the original registrant, but that there are lots of privacy proxy services where these emails just end up in a big black box somewhere, so they're totally unreachable. So what we did is, first we wanted to have some baseline overview of how often these privacy or proxy services are actually used. So we looked at every new domain that was registered over the study periods from early 2014 to the end of 2016. And so the graph we see here is not for abused domains, but for all new domain registrations, so abused and legitimate domains. And what we see here is that for legacy GTLDs, there's a fairly stable line. There's somewhere in the order of 24% of all newly registered legacy GTLDs uses a privacy and proxy service at the moment of registration. When we look at the new GTLDs, we see that there's a lot more variance for new GTLDs. On average, there's some 19% usage of privacy proxy services, but because of the variance, because of the high variance, the average doesn't say all that much in this case. Let's see. So when we switch to privacy proxy use for abusive newly registered domains, so these are domains that are registered for abusive purpose, we see again that for the legacy GTLDs, the use is fairly stable, with some, on average some 5%, with there's a spike at the end. And again, for the new GTLDs, you see that the line is much, much livelier. There's way more variance in the data for new GTLDs. So in these spikes, so in November, I guess, 2014, and another one in July 2015. So these could be caused by single campaigns of maybe spam campaigns for new GTLDs.
Sorry, I have a quick question about that graph. Is that the percent of domains that are used for abuse, only 5 to 10% of them, or 5 to 15% of them have privacy and proxy, or 5%
yes,
of privacy?
Yes, so these are...
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, these are the number of the percentage of domains, abusively registered domains, that use privacy or proxy services at the time of registration.
Right. Okay. So hardly any of them is the answer.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's not. There is. Agree. So basically, the conclusion here would be that the use of privacy or proxy services by itself is not really a reliable indication of abuse. And that the use of privacy and proxy services remains fairly higher for legacy GTLDs than it is for new GTLDs. Okay, so continuing on to geographical location. Part of the study was about mapping the geographical location of domain names. Well, at first we wanted to use the registrant location for this, but as we all know, the registrant information is notoriously unreliable. So after discussion also with the review team, we decided to use the registrar location instead. So again, we used the WISC data for this, and we extracted all the registrar names. Problem here is that the WISC data we had is somewhat... I wouldn't say polluted, but it's there are lots of different variants of registrar names. So, for instance, a big registrar such as GoDaddy might have 50 or 60 different variants
of the GoDaddy name in the Wiz data. So a big task for us to map all these different variants to a single entity, which we could then use to map or to count all the domains registered to these entities. We use the ICANN accredited registrar list to map the final registrar name to the country. And for the ones that were still missing, we used manual lookup to find these. And in the end, we found some almost 6,000 registrars. And together, these were covering 99.99% of all the domains in our WIS data. So when we look at the results, we see that when we look at the distribution of registrars to countries, we see that the majority of registrars is, because of historical reasons, is located in the United States, and followed by China and Germany at a long distance. So there's a very long tail following the United States. These are older registrars, and when we look at domains registered through these registrars, you would expect maybe they have the same distribution. So this table shows on the left side, we see the new GTLDs and the number of domains and the market share. And on the right side, we see the legacy GTLDs per country and the number of domains and its market share. So if we look at the left side, we see that the top player here is China with some 8 million domains and a share of almost 28%, followed by the U.S. and Gibraltar. And Gibraltar, tiny rock in the Mediterranean. The reason why it's number three spot here is because there's one fairly large registrar located. And the same applies to the Cayman Islands. And when we switch over to legacy GTDs again, we see that the order is different. We see that the U.S. is fairly highly dominant at the legacy GTDs, followed by China and Germany. So the domain distribution for can you still hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Martin, go on, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So the main feedback from this table is that the distribution of domains across registrars is different when we compare new GTLDs against legacy GTLDs. And when we look at the abusive domain names, for instance, the SURBL distribution, then we see that some locations really stand out, such as Gibraltar again, which for SURBL has a almost 50% count of abusive domains, followed by Japan with some 20% and China 14%. And then it goes down fairly sharp. And when we look at the legacy GTDs at the bottom table, these are two tables. It might be hard to see because there's little space on the slide for two tables. So the top table is the new GTDs, each country, the number of incidents, percentage per country, and the rate. And the top part is the legacy GTDs per country. And for legacy, again, we see that the United States is the top player, followed by Japan and China, which is almost similar as in the previous slide. Let's see. Okay. And when we skip to registrar reputation, what we had to do here was that we had to filter out registrars that are actually designed to register abusive domains, such as domains that are used to sinkhole. So we counted the number of incidents per registrar and calculated the percentage of total abuse linked to a registrar. And when we take a look at the SURBL distribution again for registrars, we have two tables on this slide. The top part is the new GTODs, and the lower part is the legacy GTODs. And here are also some players that stand out. Mostly the first player for new GTODs, which is the Nanjing Imperial Technology Registrar, which has almost, over 93% of its domains blacklisted by SURBL, followed by some other bigger bigger registrars with a lot of abusive domains. And if we look at number four, which is Alpnames, which is the registrar located in Gibraltar, we can also see that this one here has also some almost 25% of its domains blacklisted. And for the legacy registrars, the picture again, is somewhat different, but we do see some of the same registrars. For instance, for legacy, we see the Nanjing Imperial Technology Company at position number 3 with almost 31% of abusive domains. But overall, there are not many overlaps between the new GTODs and the legacy GTOD registrars. So this chart shows the Nanjing Imperial Technology Company again for abusive domains listed by SURBL and Spamhouse. And what we see here is that there's a very sharp increase in abuse starting early 2016 and then dropping off at the end of 2016. So what happened here is that because of all this abuse, the registrar accreditation has been terminated at the end of, I believe, somewhere around November 2016. And from that point onward, the abuse drops fairly dramatically again. So that's clearly visible in this chart. Well, of course, we don't know where this abuse moved to, because abuse doesn't, of course, disappear. The criminals just move to other registrars, and we don't know where the abusive domain names have been moved to, if they have been moved. Another example is the ELP names registrar. Here we see a chart that shows some fairly high volumes of abusive domain name registrations. We see that for SURBL and Spamhouse, there are also some overlapping peaks, which might suggest campaigns. The two peaks at the end, they correspond to lots of abuse in the .top and .science GTODs, new GTODs. Interesting is that although we see two very big peaks in the abuse lists for these two new GTODs, when we take a look at the domain zone files for these GTODs, we don't see any peaks there. There are no registration peaks. So that suggests that the domain names have been registered over a longer period and then used altogether at a short time. This concludes our presentation. So if there are any questions, we'd be happy to take them.
All right, this is Jordan. I have a couple of questions, but let me see if anyone else from the review team has questions before I take the chair's prerogative. I see David's got his hand raised, so David, go ahead.
Thanks, Jordan. Could we go back to the slide which is just before the proxy privacy slide set, which came? Because I'm trying to remember what my question was now. I didn't write it down. That was it. In the inferential analysis of abuse, where we got registry operator, no statistically significant results, I wondered whether, A, we shouldn't have something in here, or is it not something we can deduce where we've got registrar operator, because we see that later on with the bad actor registrars, so we're definitely seeing statistically significant results from registrars. And the second part of that question is where we've had got this issue where a registrar is linked to a registry, if that is in the public domain and proved, that would to me be a statistically significant result, because then we can see clearly a registry operator is or has a correlation with the abuse counts. And I just wanted to know what everyone thought of that and obviously what the presenters think.
So if I correctly understood the question, you were suggesting to eventually exchange as a dummy variable in our modeling and putting instead of registry operator registrar. Is that your?
Yes, it was twofold. It was when we got there, no statistically significant result for the registry operator, and I just thought, well. Mm-hmm. If we look at registrar operators, then we can see that there is a correlation. So that when I was just looking at the various, you know, new GTLD size, DNS, SEC, PARP, et cetera, but we do see something with registrar. So where we see that, I just thought that could be a point included here. And then specifically, which is where we discussed in the CCT review face-to-face, when we looked at it, there's the discussion where registrars are partly owned or entirely owned by a registry, the whole vertical separation discussion which we've had, and which was at the basis of a lot of the new GTLD applications, etc. But if we've got that and that's a public fact, then we would then have a registry operator or operators which are linked to registrars, which then show that certain registry operators and certain TLDs do show this statistically significant results. So I was just throwing that idea out there to discuss.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. That's an interesting point, especially that, for example, what we did, we picked up, for example, outnames registrar, and we made the registration there, and we just analyzed. Okay. Yeah, there's two. Okay, it looks better. So there are two things. First thing is like it might make sense actually to instead of including registry parent company, maybe a child. This is first thing. Second thing, including registrars might make more sense also. Also because of what we did, we, for example, picked up the outnames, that was very high in, I think it was number 4 in terms of abuse domains for Spamhouse, and we checked the registration policies there. And what we could see there is that it's, for example, possible to register at once 2,000 domains from selected TLDs, and randomized domains using zip codes, random numbers, cities, and so on and so on. So there, it actually might make more sense that the attackers would pick up more registrars than registries. So in this sense, it's of course a good idea to try registrants in the analysis instead of registries. But the more general problem here is that what we wanted to capture is the entire, let's say, registration policy of the registry. But probably it would make first more sense to do it at the registrar level. And second thing, actually, instead of putting specific registrars as a, we call it dummy variable, we should take into account registration policies one by one, like pricing per registrar, per day or some short period of time, we should take a registration payments, available payments into account, because maybe it's not only the price that counts there, but also the way that the attacker developed payment methods for the attackers, and so on and so on. And that should be done at the domain level or at the registry level or registrar, as also you suggested there. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And I think it makes sense to look at that, because I think there's some very interesting data for us. It's the data which kind of gets hidden and we don't see it. And I think your point you just made there about a registration policy allowing the possibility to register 2,000 domains across various TLDs, I hadn't picked up on that. I'd certainly like to know more about that, because that's a very interesting policy to have. And one has to, it begs the question, why do you have such a policy? And I'd very much like to see what TLDs that goes across, and whether there is a registry operator that is somehow behind that, because that seems to me the bad behavior which we don't want to be seeing. So that you mentioned that's Altnames is one of the registrars with that policy. That's something I think we should be considering and looking at. And did you see the fact that that was happening? Did you have the data where you saw where those domain names were being registered in which TLDs, and were those 2,000 or those sort of names generally abusive ones? Or did you probably don't have that depth of data?
No, we do not have this data, but we checked if that's possible to collect this data, and we would be actually possible using a different APIs and collection methods, active and passive measurements, collect such data per registrar, per TLD, on daily basis or even on hourly basis. And then we could really link, for example, promotions to domains that were actually registered that very time. So this is an interesting thing. And coming back to your...
I was going to say, can we do that? I'd be very interested in the results of that. Is that something which is feasible now, or is that something which is just not feasible at this stage and it's for a later state? Or is it the data you've got and you can run a few calculations?
No, that is not visible now, but it's a possible future work. Because the thing is, we would need to start collecting all this data, and after some time, we would need to perform actual longitudinal analysis there. So far, we're not collecting this data, but we checked if that is visible actually, and that would require some effort, but that would be a very, very interesting study.
Just following up, maybe that can be a recommendation which we have then. If we can't have that data in this report, we can tie in a recommendation to that, because it is not a ridiculous red. Recommendation, it's something which we know.
Yeah, I don't know if...
Yeah, we lost David.
Yeah, we lost David, okay. So it was not only...
No. So this is...
I partially heard the question, and... I definitely think that it could be a recommendation, because we find, for example, a lot of anecdotal evidence that the price plays a role there. But the thing is, we might actually miss some very important details, that some registry, for example, offers much lower prices, but at the same time puts a lot of effort to verify the identity of the registrar. Or, for example, does not offer certain payment methods because that would be convenient for the attackers, or does not offer this excellent from the attacker point of view kind of domain name generation algorithm for him or her. So that's something very, very interesting. Also, coming back to point before about altnames, I definitely agree. We can just guess what type of clients they're trying to attract by generating randomly domains using the cheapest TLDs and offering such service as as domain name generation using zip codes or cities and so on and so on. So that's an open question, of course, but everyone can guess what the answer there also.
Thanks, Maciej. It's Jordan. I'm jumping the queue because my question is related to David's. And in particular, the discussion around opnames. To the best of my knowledge, opnames is basically the house registrar for a specific registry operator. And so we see pretty clearly that there's a lot of abuse, no matter if it's measured by rate or by number of incidents in the opnames registrar. So I guess I would have assumed that that also translated into a high rate of abuse in the famous four TLDs. So then I guess I was surprised to see that you guys didn't find any statistically significant correlation with abuse counts. Did you guys take a look at, do you guys have any similar tables to the ones that you have by registrar, by registry operator, at least just to see, you know, if there's any registry operators that stand out in terms of number of incidents and percentage of domains that were used for abuse?
For registries? Sorry, Jordan,
For by registry operators. So you say the registry, there's no correlation.
No, what we did, we just aggregated abuse counts per TLD, not really per registry operators. Registry operators we used only as a potentially a variable, explanatory variable. But you know, Jordan, one thing there is the thing that we haven't found statistically significant results. It doesn't mean that the relation is not there. It's just complex, and it really needs time. And that this also this idea we came up while discussing in your Connect book, but the reality occurred much more complex, simply because the registry operator might capture many more signals than we can potentially imagine. That's why one of the recommendations is, instead of putting registry operator there as a potential driving factor, we should actually distinguish and measure each driver separately and include it in the entire model.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that would be interesting as well. But there are registry, you know. So for example, you know, there are some registry operators that believe very much in these like sort of restricted models. So when you say like the type is negative. Has a negative correlation. You know, I know that there are some registry operators that have, you know, either all or most of their TLDs have these restricted models. There's other registry operators that believe very much in sort of open TLD models. So I guess it's just surprising to me that given that the correlations were shown elsewhere and that we see high incidence in some of the registrars that are sort of house registrars, for particular registry operators, that we didn't see the correlation. But once again, you know, there's some other tables that might be interesting to see, just some of the, like doing some of the comparisons like you guys did by per registrar on a registry operator basis might be instructive. But I guess we'll follow up in some of our thinking about follow-on recommendations. Thank you.
Agree.
And now, before I jump to, sorry to keep you waiting, Laureen, but there is a question in the chat from Carlton from a while back that I want to make sure gets addressed. Actually, there's two, I think. But let's go with the most recent one, which is about the overlaps in registrars for new and legacy abuse registrations. Is there any qualitative difference in the appointment process? And Carlton, by appointment process, do you mean is there a difference in how registrars, do some registrars have different processes for becoming accredited with ICANN, or do you mean something else by appointment process? Carlton's typing.
So is there a difference in accreditation process? I actually think maybe does someone from ICANN staff have an answer to that? I think I know the answer, but I don't know if anyone wants to weigh in. Or if Mate or Martin know the answer, feel free to provide that answer. Yeah, Carl says, why don't we, it seems like we don't have the answer right here, so why don't we take that as a bit of homework? I think the answer is no. I think ICANN has a really consistent accreditation process across all registrars, but let's get that confirmation. Lorraine, you've been waiting.
Thanks. Thanks, Jordan. My question has to do with a reference in your paper on page 6, where you're talking about URLs used to distribute child abuse materials and your observation that some unique qualified domain names, FQDNs, can be used to distribute tens of hundreds of images. And I was wondering, it seems like an aside in the paper, and that there's no other mention of that particular type of abuse, which, of course, as I read it, wasn't really the topic of the study. But was that something that you actually gathered data on, or was that related to prior work?
Thanks for the question. So that was more related to our previous work. Interesting thing there, I mean, it's a pity we only could analyze the data from a hostage from the Netherlands. We tried the entire InHope network to get the data from entire InHope network from Europe, but we didn't manage. But the short answer is yes, that's our previous work.
I see. So in this study, there wasn't any data that related to child abuse images as a type of abuse, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. Yeah, I know that certain parts of the community, particularly certain members of the GAC, are particularly interested in this sort of information and study. So I wanted to clarify in my own mind whether, incidentally, whether the data you had collected for this study included this topic as well, or whether that was something that was totally separate.
And maybe one remark here. If we could get this data, like global data, it would be very, very interesting because let's say that in the Netherlands the problem somehow we managed to solve the problem, but globally we speculate that we should observe that the attackers simply will move from the Netherlands somewhere else, and this is something that we would really like to study, but it's unfortunately impossible for a moment because we do not have access to this type of data.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
Thank you.
All right, so there's another question in the chat from Carlton, which is for Maciej, which is, do you have a qualified set of data labels and definitions that you work from?
So by labels, you mean, for example, maliciously registered versus compromised versus legitimate and so on, or some different labels?
I see Carlton and Brian are both typing. So yeah, Carlton agreed, yes, that sort of label.
Yes, we have of course this data. Yes.
All right, I see Carlton may have a follow-up, but I see Drew's got his hand raised in the meantime, so go ahead, Drew.
Hi, yes. So thanks for the presentation and all the answers. I have a question about some of the data you presented regarding privacy and proxy usage and abuse. It appears that looking at all the various charts you presented, that at the same time that there was perhaps a dip in overall abuse on many of those charts broken down by, you know, malware hosting, overall abuse, phishing campaigns, et cetera, that at the same time there was that dip toward the end of 2016, that's when there was a spike in the use of privacy and proxy services. And I was just wondering if you had any theories as to why that may be, that the abuse that still did exist was, you know, more strongly correlated with the use of privacy and proxy service.
Which chart is, let me go to the, what's in the slides?
Yeah, so, yeah, if we go, yeah, some of the ones you just passed by showed there being some sort of dip. Oh, sorry.
Where? Back?
So there, yeah, so here we have for privacy and proxy services, oh, I guess it was for legacy GTLDs. Okay, I was going off of memory of what I thought I saw in the presentation. Okay, so for legacy GTLDs, there appears to be a spike in the use of privacy and proxy services, whereas some of those other trends we see related to specific types of abuse, there appear, oh, okay, yes, I was thinking of this chart. Okay. The usage for abusive newly registered domains. Okay, so the use of privacy and proxy services for newly registered domain names, there was a spike at the end of the year. And then some of those other trends you showed with regard to specific types of abuse, there appeared to have been a dip, whereas perhaps there was some sort of campaign maybe in July of 2016 that showed, and right now off the top of my head, I'm just going off of what I remember from the presentation. I don't remember which chart, if it was related to phishing or malware hosting or whatnot, but there seemed to have been a spike maybe in July in overall types of other forms of abuse, and then a dip by the end of the year at the same time that we're seeing this spike in the use of privacy and proxy services. Yeah, so here with malware domains in particular must have been what I was thinking of.
Yeah, okay. So Maciek, do you have any idea why this might be the case?
What, once more, Martin, what's
so why do we have, for instance, at the at this slide, for privacy proxy services at the end, we see spikes, like an increase in the use of privacy proxy services for abusive newly registered domains. And when we go here, we see and decrease for abusive domains. For
okay, first thing is that those are here. We those are different data sets. Here, what I can say is for sure that those are not related. Those spikes are not related to privacy and proxy services because we manually check them and are single campaigns. And we could we could conclude that those are single campaigns because of registrar names, among others. And for spikes in privacy and proxy services, we actually, we tried to find some anecdotal evidence by manually analyzing this data and actually prove or as I was saying, find some anecdotal evidence that those belong to the same campaign. But if someone was using actually privacy and proxy services, they were also making sure that that other anecdotal evidence is not there. So they were, for example, registering those domains in a longer period. But but I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps, you know, it's all just a bunch of separate campaigns. I just found it kind of interesting that there was that significant increase in the percentage of abused domain names that used privacy and proxy services at a time when the overall numbers of abusive domain names perhaps were going down because, you know, there was that spike in the summer, and yet that wasn't the same time as the spike in the use of privacy and proxy domain names. So I guess perhaps that's related to, yeah, maybe just two different types of campaigns.
So the short answer there is that those are different data sets, so we can, yeah.
Okay, and then one follow-up question. I'm sure there will be other questions. Going back to what everyone else has been speaking about with regard to the common registry operators and correlations with abuse, and I know we've discussed this and how there are so many different factors that go into it. Is there anything in addition to what's already in the paper that you might be able to provide us with so that in the paper we could at least acknowledge all the different factors that would go into abuse that you already have pointed out, such as price, restrictiveness of registration policies, size of TLD and whatnot, but where we could at least state that, you know, with these other variables in mind that drive all of these things, it still appears there is this common trend but amongst registry operators and abuse, or just something we could state so we could at least better acknowledge that potential common thread, especially in light of, you know, what Jordan has discussed with the fact that some registry operators we know will have common registration policies overall. And so for those, we might be able to say, hey, even with common registration policies, it appears other factors such as perhaps price might be, you know, distinct factors in driving abuse, or is there anything like that so we could at least draw some conclusions even though we would have to acknowledge all these other variables?
So thanks for this question. So I believe that to make systematic study it would be impossible at this point, because simply the collection of the data, we would need to collect the data over time and so on. But also in the paper itself, there are quite a lot of there is quite a lot of anecdotal evidence. For example, for pricing, if we take a look at the top 10, a list of top 10 registries, sorry, not registries, TLDs, that are the most abused TLDs, I think in the appendixes of the report, then it's very easy to verify under which a registry operator they're operating. So at least some anecdotal evidence about, and of course then verifying that a few, or like I'm not sure, for example, 5 out of 10 of those are under the operation of Famous Four, or we find, if you take a look at the list of the top 10 TLDs, then it's very easy to find the registration pricing at the end of 2016, and that would provide some, again, anecdotal but evidence of the common registration practice, meaning a price in this case.
Thank you. And just based on, I know this is not present overall statistically, because I think at some point we discussed this and it was difficult to discern, but anecdotally, do you have any conclusions that may not be in the paper that you might be able to express about the use of, or the correlation between resellers and abuse versus registrars, as resellers are not, have no direct contractual relationship with ICANN?
No, it was very difficult for us. We got some data. I'm not sure if it was, I think that the data was from our first WHOIS data provider. There were resellers, chains of resellers, but we could not determine the order of the resellers. So it's really hard at this point to actually draw any conclusions, for example, about resellers there.
Thanks.
All right, and it looks like Thanks. David has another question.
Thanks, Jordan. To the presenters, I mean, having done the data analysis and having been through all of this, is there any specific data that you wish you'd had and which ICANN collected or was available elsewhere that would have enabled you to drill down into certain things, some of which we may have discussed? But I mean, you've looked at the data yourselves and you've gone through, and have you come up with something saying, oh, I wish we'd had that data, that would be interesting, because I'm wondering whether we could correlate that into a recommendation for future DNS abuse studies.
So at the time of the study, of course, we were thinking about many different features, especially when we found out that the great majority of domains in utilities are maliciously registered. But I think that all data sets, I think now we would be able to collect even ourselves. And that would include, of course, we mentioned it several times, pricing, but also with promotions. But also what would be very interesting in including in the future analysis would be actually to verify the correlation with uptimes. If actually the reactive security measures somehow influence the choice of the attackers. That could be interesting to add on the top of different registration policies. That's what I can think of. But apart from that, all kind of interesting data that could be related to a registration restrictness, including promotions, including the availability of free WHOIS data, a registrar, free DNS services, and so on and so on. But this is we checked it, and we would be able actually to collect this data at this point. And of course, that would take time. We could not really. I don't think that this data actually exists on a daily basis, for example, per registrar. But we would be able to collect this data and potentially perform some follow up analysis.
Thanks.
All right, and then I'm going to try to wrap this conversation up so we can have some follow-up discussion ourselves, but I do notice that Carlton had put in some question, follow-up question in the chat a while ago, which was whether you could share the labeling that you've done with ICANN and your overall data. And I think my understanding is you've already given a copy of your data set to Drew, is that right?
So we gave aggregated statistics to Drew. The problem with sharing the pairs, domains and labels, we would need to actually cross check with the data providers if they would be willing to share this data. On our side, there is no problem. We could share this data, but that would need to be discussed with data providers, actually.
Sure. So you've just given various forms of aggregation to Drew.
Exactly.
Right. My guess is that's probably more easier for the review team to work with in any case. I see both Carlton and Jamie are typing. I'll give them just a second to type, make sure there's no final questions. But I do want to spend a couple minutes before we end. Whoa.
All right. Jamie provided a lengthy clarification about ICANN's enforcement on resellers. So as opposed to reading that out loud, I'll have folks refer to the chat. But in any case, it sounds like ICANN does have some enforcement of relevant policies on resellers through the registrar agreements and through requirements on the registrar's pass-through to resellers. But no direct relationship with the reseller. All right, as Drew points out. I'm going to thank both of you for your time and for this instructive call. I know you guys are doing webinars as well, and so certainly it'll be interesting to see the rest of the community's response. And then I think we'll wrap it up, let you guys go, and we'll have a brief discussion of Drew's paper and next steps for the review team. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So, Drew, can you you sent out a new version of the DNS abuse paper today? Or yesterday? I don't remember. Very recently. Do you want to give us a brief synopsis of any changes that you made as part of this last round of revisions?
Yeah, so very briefly, the changes incorporate what was discussed in last week's call. However, I did not change the recommendation at all because there didn't seem to be any consensus on changes that needed to be made to those in their current form. However, there was at the time a proposal to possibly add an additional recommendation, and instead what I did with that after our group discussion where there didn't seem to be consensus on creating that additional recommendation, I still took those points and incorporated it into the body. And so basically what I've basically what I did was acknowledge that there may be other forms of abuse identified by the community, and I acknowledge that in a few places. So going up to the top, I changed the introduction of this chapter a bit, and I imagine we'll develop this even better before the final form, but at least before this goes out for public comment, I made sure that we are acknowledging that DNS abuse can be defined much more broadly than technical abuse by different communities, but also acknowledge that there's not consensus in those definitions, due in large part to the local nature of laws enforcing various forms of criminal activity that may constitute DNS abuse, as well as subjective interpretations, especially with regard to anything that is much more content dependent, and then the fact that these types of abuse may actually fall largely on other infrastructure providers, such as hosting providers, and therefore we're not, there isn't necessarily consensus. However, I use that as an intro to the fact that the ICANN community, of course, did reach some consensus on technical forms of abuse that they were concerned about prior to the introduction of the new GTLD program, and that informed the safeguards that were developed as part of the new GTLD program, which therefore consequently became our focus. So that's just a lot more context to that. And going along those same lines of identifying other forms of abuse and also allowing for there to be for our recommendations to apply to other forms of abuse in the future, I acknowledged toward the end, and I apologize, I'm trying to find where I put a sentence at the end of the body of the text that said these recommendations may be applicable to curb other misuse of domain names to the extent the community reaches consensus on other forms of DNS abuse. And so I put that in place instead of making a completely distinct recommendation that the community reach consensus on these forms of abuse. So that's more so to acknowledge that that's going to organically develop
presumably, as DNS abuse is tackled in different arenas, but to say that these recommendations are not to be construed so narrowly in the future to the extent, you know, consensus may develop. And then other than that, in the body, I added more data from some of the findings, such as some of the findings that may deal with intellectual property infringement, the overlap between technical DNS abuse and intellectual property infringement, where we see what the researchers have pointed out with regard to the use of Apple-related trademarks and DNS abuse. And I think that feeds directly into what we're concluding and even the recommendations we're making with regard to proactive practices that may be undertaken to prevent certain forms of technical DNS abuse. And added, yeah, just a bit more context about some of the other things, and nothing that I would say is earth-shattering. And with that said, I wrote this very late, so I probably have to go back and even fix typos with some of this stuff. So those are the big high-level things. And so my plan is to, I know I got an email from Watto and, about some stylistic changes I should make. So my plan would be to go back through and clean this up in that way, but not substantively change the recommendation unless there is, you know, any opposition to our recommendations as is and we reach consensus on what they should be like going into the public comment round.
All right, thanks, Drew. I see David's raised his hand. I'll point out Carlton noted in the chat that there's three types of named categories of abuse in the contract that aren't considered technical, so it might be good to explicitly acknowledge those. And Carlton, I'd just suggest perhaps the most useful thing to do would be just drop Drew an email with that information so he could get, or an edit to the paper so he can get that incorporated. But why don't we go ahead and David's got his hand raised.
Thanks, Jordan. Drew, I noticed in the chat there you asked whether I could recommend some language for that, for a recommendation or a potential recommendation. So I'll try and thrash that out a little bit and send you an email on that, or we can speak. But that raised me, having been through it, and I like the amendments, I did skim through this paper, and I'm obviously quite keen on the whole DNS abuse side of things. I think it is fundamentally important. But one of the recommendations, I wondered whether we needed to call it out in a very specific way, was where we've got, you know, abuse rates are clearly correlating inversely proportional to stricter registration policies, where if we're seeing a registry operator that's been identified, or we're able to identify it as experiencing significant abuse, and we see quite a few of these up there, the ones that there are or there is significant abuse, should we not be recommending a requirement that they either clean up or adopt stricter policies, something along those lines? Is that something which we should consider doing? Because that was just, it struck me, and again struck me further listening to the presentation this time as we did in the face-to-face. It seems to be something we should go for, but I don't know what you think. I'm happy to discuss this further, listening.
The problem with doing that would be that we would just be calling out the registrars or registries that we know about in the sense that there could be, because of all the different variables that go into play with all of this, there would then be some we would be missing. So on the one hand, I get your point, if we have this evidence, why not call them out specifically and say, you need to do this? I think exposure through transparency to the extent we can describe it is better. And then in terms of specifically requiring stricter registration policies, instead the way that the recommendations are tailored, and I can't remember if you were on the call when I went over this, I don't remember if I went over it last week or the week before, but basically I've tried to tailor these recommendations to acknowledge that a free and open internet is invariably going to have registries with low registration requirements that are
very open, as well as perhaps low prices, and that in the midst of that, we could still have other practices that they could undertake. So it might not change the registration policy, but practices they could undertake that would reduce abuse. And so especially when we're looking at the use of Apple trademarks registered by perhaps even the same registrant, you know, there's things like that in the screening process in the beginning that if they were looking for those things, that type of abuse would not happen even if they had or would happen at lower rates if, even if they had open registration policies and low prices because they were at least scrutinizing things proactively and perhaps stopping, you know, obvious offenders and whatnot or flagging them or maybe even putting some sort of time, you know, not allowing those domains to go active right away if they're flagged in a certain way and require manual review. So there's other practices instead. And so practices I think we should be recommending, but perhaps not policies, you know, that would place very strict restrictions. But with that said, obviously I am completely open to any sort of draft language you would come up with, or any ideas you might have about how we could call out what we know and what we've seen, but not be, I guess, too inclusive to where we're, you know, mistakenly only calling out three operators when maybe there's 100 other bad ones, and instead what our recommendations construed as being is sanctioning the 100 other bad ones and only calling out the three.
All right.
Thanks. And
all right.
We can probably take that offline and discuss it a bit more, Drew. And I suppose part of my thinking really just comes back to the, if we put an analogy with the trademark world and the PDDRP, when that was put in place to deal with abuse of trademarks by a GTLD operator, we don't seem to have an equivalent in the DNS abuse world, and there seems to be a heck of a lot more abuse going on in the DNS abuse than in the trademark abuse. So maybe arguably we're saying that the PDDRP, having a mechanism in place, has helped reduce the abuse of trademarks, and that would be a good thing to have something similar in DNS abuse.
Yeah, let's absolutely continue this discussion today or tomorrow.
All right, thanks, Liz. We're over time. So based on the conversation in the chat, I think what we're likely to do is try to formulate the to reform the tomorrow's is it tomorrow the Safeguard and Consumer Trust
cool.
meeting. When's that scheduled for? Is that for 10 tomorrow? 10 Eastern?
That's tomorrow at 1 p.m. UTC.
1300 UTC.
Yeah.
Is that the same time as the competition call?
Oh, sorry. You mean the webinar?
No, I mean the Safeguard and Consumer Trust team.
No. The Safeguard is scheduled just after the competition sub team call. So at 14 UTC.
14 UTC. All right. So we'll have to figure out. We'll have an offline discussion, but we'll probably try to turn one of the tomorrow's sub-team slots into a plenary slot to continue this conversation, since almost all of the interesting topics prior to the publication of our supplemental report are in the safeguards side of the equation. So we'll work that out via email and send an update to everyone very shortly. It sounds like we'll have to see at least one more revision of Drew's paper before we can finalize it as well based on today's discussion. So look for more discussion on these interesting topics around DNS abuse very soon. Thanks, everyone, for joining the call today.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.